figure out what was the magic sauce that would get people to do things. And in the end, I decided it was, we had to build content that would either help people make more money or keep them out of jail.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, once again to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Sabina Steinbrusher. Sabina, what's up? How are you?
I couldn't be better. I'm sorry I'm not with you in studio today. It would have been much more fun, but I'm down here in South Bristol, so we'll have to do it at a distance.
Yeah, you're not far. For anyone who's watching, they can see I'm in this new studio, and eventually I'll have you come in. Maybe we'll record some videos or a podcast in person, but I'm excited to talk to you. You're a certified hivologist. Well, what does that even mean when I say certified hivologist?
Well, it's sort of, it's all about my new company. It's called Hivology. And we saw ourselves as being guides, studying the way that people learn, and designed a new learning platform that we think of as more of an ecosystem. So it's really more of a hive concept. So all of us who are helping lead them through the hive and lead them through their learning journey, we see us as hivologists because we're, you know, the ones that are not just their guides, but we're also studying how people learn and how to improve the learning process. So that's where that all came from. And of course, I'm the chief. So, you know, it goes without saying, I'm chief hivologist.
And I'm talking to the chief hivologist. And you're new to the Rochester area, Rochester, Buffalo area. You're new to hivology. This is something you've just recently birthed. But you have quite a bit of experience in virtual learning, training, the whole shabam. Let's walk through, you're born. No, you don't have to go that far back. But where did this interest come from? And let's kind of walk through the story behind the story of how you got started. Where do you want to start?
Well, I'll tell you, the very first project came out of a business arrangement I had with one of the big banks in Canada, because I'm originally Canadian, and we were working on something that was kind of cool with them. They wanted to do the very first, this is how long ago this was, by the way, they were doing the very first desktop banking application. It was an intranet application. There wasn't even an internet application at the time. And back then I was running a small little agency in a publishing company. And I represented all these great people who were really knowledgeable in finance and economics and similar things. Anyway, long story short, we came up with this really cool idea that no one had ever done before of creating a video streaming educational module that could go with the desktop banking that would teach people about things like what's a mutual fund and how do I do this? And, you know, the sort of basics in finance. And then that morphed into doing sort of animated versions and things. And this was back in 97. So it was before there was anything really other than, you know, porn on the internet, pretty much. So
when you say animated versions, like what did that look like? That's not like the fun animation you see on Cartoon Network. This was the beginning.
Pretty basic. It was pretty basic, yeah. But it turned out great. And the video streaming, I was so lucky. I ran into this company that was based in Toronto at the time that they were able to help me figure out how to actually turn what we had built for the bank into a full-on internet version. And we started doing everything from scratch. So in 98, I launched the company, had an investor come in. We built the whole thing. And it was one of the very first e-learning companies in the world. But there might've been one or two ahead of us. And so we were full on bleeding edge. Yeah. It was a tough sell at the beginning. Everybody got why it mattered, but it was extremely difficult to get people to adopted that early, mostly because, you know, most of the users would have had trouble, obviously, with full-blown video streaming education at that time. So we were a little early, but it was pretty cool. And because I was so early, I ended up getting one of the largest trade association in the world became my very first customer. They had back then already, they had 1.2 million members, and it was the National Association of Realtors. So that moved me right away into real estate education, which is where I ended up spending a good chunk of my time for the last 20 years. So, and still do.
And is this all with your business learning library, or is this even before Learning Library was founded?
That was Learning Library. So that was the earliest moments of Learning Library. We built this, what we envisioned to be a adult education, compliance-based sort of professional education learning platform. So we built a learning management system, which is the whole platform the education resides in. And then we also had to build all of the content. We had to build a database. We had to build everything. So nothing existed at the time. Now, a lot of companies use off-the-shelf bits and pieces, of course, and you're able to cobble together something pretty easily or use a vendor, of course. But back then, there was nothing. So, and plus we were working in a market that was accredited education, which means compliance. So we had CE hours to track, we had designations to track, certifications to track, and nobody was doing that at all. We were certainly one of the first for that. So that was a pretty amazing learning experience. And it's made myself and my team some of the, you know, sort of the OGs of e-learning. And we've really just embraced it. And now we're doing stuff that I think is still just as cool, if not way more fun than then, because we have more capacity now. And obviously their technology has caught up to a lot of it. So it's been pretty cool. But that's been basically where the journey started.
It's amazing. It's nowadays, like, the journey's not quite as complicated. There's a stack for everything. I have a friend that for fun had an AI write a podcast episode, and then the AI used his voice to speak the episode. And I'm like, holy crap, like, what? There's a stack for everything. You were doing this when people barely even knew how to operate a computer. What? Talk about some of the major challenges you ran into. Nowadays, I feel like I could just Google something or buy a software and the challenge is fixed. What were some of those major challenges, and how did you pivot or turn or twist to actually accomplish this such a huge thing?
It was probably the first couple of years. You know, the investor that was helping me at the time, you know, spent a ton of money basically trying to figure out how to build each of these individual pieces. And it cost way more than it would have even 10 years after that. Like, it was enormous investment at the time. So one of the biggest challenges we had was all of this trial and error, just trying to figure out every piece of it, how to do testing online, how to do, you know, even things like identity, like, how do we know you're the one taking the test? Or like, there were so many pieces of this that were incredibly complicated. So we had a big, big programming group for a long time. And those guys were amazing. We had an incredible team. And they really did a wonderful job figuring out all the bits and pieces of this. And certainly it's iterated over the years. But there are pieces of this that we did right back then already, that is really quite amazing that we made some of those decisions correctly, that we're still implementing in a way now. But that was a big part of it. So having the funding to be able to sort of figure it out at the time was critical. To your point, you know, now it's easy. You can figure out a tech stack so much simpler and costs next to nothing for half the stuff that we spent millions to build, you know. Wow. Yeah, so that was a big difference for sure. And then the other part of it was the sort of the go-to-market strategy. We had decided that we wanted to be the biggest on the planet immediately, of course. So we went after we were going after the association space primarily because they're the ones that held the keys to all professional education and particularly compliance-based education. So that's the space that we wanted to go after. So at the time we hired, I think it was 2 or 3 researchers who did nothing but look up people, try to find people. Because again, that stuff didn't exist 25 years ago. It wasn't as easy to find a database of association executives and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, that was pre LinkedIn and pre all that stuff, right? So bottom line was we had a bunch of each level had a pretty significant challenge. And probably the hardest part was the sales process in the end, trying to get not just the associations themselves were not that difficult. It was the end users, getting end users to pivot to doing a course online was much harder than we thought it was going to be. So that ended up being a place where we ended up having to focus a lot and figure out what was the magic sauce that would get people to do things. And in the end, I decided it was, we had to build content that would either help people make more money or keep them out of jail. And that was our little mantra in the company, you know. It was one of those two, but that's it. And to some degree, we still do that.
So I know about making money. Tell me about staying out of jail. Is it just for training and for compliance kind of thing?
Yeah, it really is. That's just my sort of cheeky way of saying that. Like code of ethics and, you know, tools and education that will literally teach them to stay legal and how to do things like contracts and things like that. Like that's the sort of stuff that, you know, or even just to maintain their license, something that's mandatory, you know, that kind of thing. Like those were literally the simple decisions that we made that kept us afloat all those years. Because the first few years were incredibly lean. It was really difficult.
Amazing. And Sabina, the fact you went through and innovated and created things that virtually didn't even exist gives me so much confidence that in your new endeavor, Hivology, that you're going to continue to innovate, continue to kick butt. I'm here to support you. You already accomplished so many things and you worked on it for a pretty darn long time. Why did you decide to pivot and start something brand new? Well, what did that look like?
That was a combination of things. That was partly my wanting to take all these years of, you know, knowledge of this space and distill it into something that had my brand on it and my name on it in a different way. Like we're going to market as ourselves. In previous iterations as Learning Library, we were a platform that other people had their name on. We were a private label. We were a SaaS operation. We're now going direct to the clients themselves. We're going direct to end users. We're doing it in a way that I've always wanted to do it. Certainly the last number of years, probably 5-7 years, I've had a different model in mind. So the innovation for me is being able to execute on this new model. And that's something that I really wanted to do. You know, it might be that this is another 5 years of my life focused on e-learning. It might be longer. I'm not sure yet, but the truth is I really enjoy the new way that we're doing this. And I think we're doing it in a way that's pretty cool. It's not, by the way, I don't consider where we're at like as bleeding edge as where we were at the beginning of Learning Library when we were at the beginning of the internet. But this is a way to sort of amalgamate all the things that I've learned and really deliver something in a way that I'm particularly proud of.
You're at the cutting edge of something that's new and necessary because, yeah I mean, I didn't even use Zoom a single time until COVID hit. But you've been in the virtual e-world for plenty of time, and now it's never been bigger. What's Hivology doing that's maybe a little bit different than I've seen before, or what can I expect when I jump on Hivology.com, right?
Yes, yeah, it's Hivology.com. What's happening, you won't see at all. We're actually doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, which is
like that
kind of a fun mystery. Yeah. I really want the experience for our students to be as practical and tactical as possible. So how we do it is far less important to them than it is to us. So what we've really focused on is creating this ecosystem that I mentioned earlier. Like Hivology is this learning hive. So all of the elements that we're working on are designed to work together so that incrementally we can make somebody hopefully more successful in what they do, but also more successful more quickly. You know, we're using data in a way that is unique. We're trying to plug in not just analytics and data, but also take advantage of machine learning and AI and other things that are helping us develop tools and knowledge about them that I can help them get better faster, you know, those kinds of things. We're using learning design in a way that it's funny, you know, the more that this technology advances, the less real learning is online. Real learning has instructional design. Real learning has a number of things that most of what's out there doesn't have. Like a video library is great. It teaches you something, but it's not true learning. It's not applying adult learning principles. It's not really focused on design. So we're trying to blend those things.
I want you to talk a little bit about that. So I watch a video, It's mm-hmm. entertaining. What kind of integration or feedback loop, or you're using words that I don't always understand, so I don't know if the listener does.
Sure.
What does it actually look like in practice, the actual mm-hmm. learning at its best?
You'll get learning varies per person, certainly. So, you know, we always have to remember that everybody's got different learning style. So what we've tried to do is embody a platform that can deliver things in a different way for different people and across all of them, keep a couple of key things going or in mind for everybody. Mm-hmm. So for instance, we have a micro tactics approach to everything. Basically, that's what we call it. But basically what that means is the bulk of learning is broken into little modules that are less than 15 minutes.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. So even if it's a 10-hour program, it's 15 minutes, 15 minutes, 15 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, or it's just 15 minutes and it's a little micro topic and it's something that you can learn quickly, like a little skill or tactic that we can apply fast. And in those cases, sometimes it's okay to just be a video, or it's okay to be something you can, you know, download and reference every day, or it's an interview or story. You can learn from anything. There's no question about that. I think everything we're all doing adds to the learning value. But when you start moving into more high stakes training, or perhaps we need to do something that's longer and people need to really sort of, you know, learn it and imbue it, then we tend to try to apply different learning styles. So that means a combination of applications, but also learning retention testing, things like throwing in polls and quizzes and exams and things that will actually help them know if they're learning something. Mm-hmm. But also the way that we're delivering it. So we mix it up from audio and video to animation to, you know, some are just text, some are a combination of things, lots of homework, lots of practical stuff. You know, here's a great field trip, all kinds of neat things that you can do. And we even do things that I can only say it this way, it's going to sound terrible, but we do our best to bribe people to stay to the end of a course, because yeah. It's tough to get everybody to remain focused for a whole program. So we're trying to give them as many reasons to stay to the end, like they get special access to bonuses, or maybe they get, you know, peer group reviews that they wouldn't have gotten before. Anything we can do, you know, to take them offline, online, whatever it takes to get them through it, because we know that that's going to help make them more successful. So that's the way we're doing it anyway. So I hope that answers it a little bit.
I like a good little bribery. I mean, gamification. I mean, a simple,
exactly.
I'll use a really simple example. I go on Amazon.com, I buy something, I don't need it speed shipped. They'll bribe me with some digital dollars that I can respend. And it just makes it fun. It makes for an interactive experience. And
yeah.
I like what you're talking about, because it's just reminding me of like a physical fitness journey. And I've joked with what I do as a marketer and just in general, if you show up for a personal trainer and all they do is work your left arm, but they don't work your right arm or your shoulders or your legs or talk about nutrition or talk about sleep, are you going to get results? And and even when you talk about nutrition, some diets are better for some people than for other people. There is no one right way. So it sounds like you're taking a very full spectrum, like holistic approach that will do visual animation. You can listen, you can bite size, long form, so people can actually get results. Isn't that really the point? Like, it's not for entertainment.
Right.
It's for getting results, right?
That was literally the part of it that I always found so frustrating. It's like, it wasn't about the results always. It was always just, we'll get it up there, you know, or not always, but a lot of the stuff that's out there, I don't think necessarily is really studying how people will apply it or absorb it or whatever. So, you know, we're literally, what you just said is what we're trying to do. We're, you know, we even use gamification. We have a rewards program with points and badges and certificates and all kinds of goodies. We've got vendors who can be involved as well. And we can actually introduce somebody to a tool that will help them execute what we're teaching them. So it's not just about theory. It's okay, here's a great little tool you can use too. And, you know, go talk to them. And maybe here's a perk to go do it. Here's 3 months free or something, you know, that kind of stuff. We're really trying to make it as practical as possible. And I think that's what's different to a large degree about what we're doing.
Yeah, how practical it is. And I'm curious, I know you built your castle you know, with real estate, and you're also brilliant in the insurance space. Obviously, if you're a real estate or insurance professional, I've been on the site, there's great information, but is it just for those industries, or are you broadening as well?
For the moment, everything that I've done so far has been for the real estate space, because that's where we have the bulk of our expertise. And yes, I wanted to prove out the model because it's so new. But truly my goal is to move this into many other spaces, and at least to move it into similar spaces where I call them sort of practice-based businesses. So you could be everything from an insurance agent to a real estate agent to a mortgage broker to, you know, a pharmacist, and you've got a practice that you're building. And those are the people that are, you know, they really need to invest in themselves. They need to treat themselves as a business, and generally don't have this, you know, corporation above them that's paying for everything and training them and that kind of stuff. Not always, anyway. So that's basically all the spaces that I would like to go into. But I also have, you know, we have our social mission and a couple of other things that are leading us into potentially some very different and cool new directions as well. So we'll see.
You said your social mission. Tell us a little bit more about that social mission of yours.
I'd love to. We decided that we wanted to do better than the 1% pledge that everybody's sort of, you know, been talking about. We decided to do a 3% pledge. And what we're doing is 3% of every dollar that comes in the door goes into a real life honeybee sanctuary. So real hives in the real world. And that's our social mission. We feel very strongly about it. And so we invested in an apiary, a big one down here in near Canandaigua. And our partners in this are a couple who are very experienced, second generation master beekeepers, if you can imagine. It's so cool. And they're helping us. So they're the ones that are the experts that are, you know, have helped build it and all that good stuff. So that's our social mission. It's pretty exciting for us.
That's cool. And to clarify, because this is the Rochester kind of local segment, but I have listeners all across the globe, really. It's kind of cool to see where some people are listening. This isn't just, so right now there's a beekeeper hive.
An apiary? Do you mean the actual physical space? Yeah, an apiary is fine.
So right now that's in Canandaigua, New York, but my assumption is anyone in the world can utilize this service and opportunity. Yeah. And am I correct that you're not planning on just having it in Canandaigua? You're going to probably set up as many as possible, right?
That's the goal. Absolutely. In fact, what we're trying to do is figure out how we also sort of treat the apiaries as their own little mini business so that they can be as self-sustaining as possible. Now, they're first and foremost about bee health and about saving bees. They're not about honey, but they are, honey is of course a byproduct. So there is a way for us to use the two. So our next sort of side thing that we're working on with another partner is to develop a business model around something to do with funding the apiaries themselves. So it's not just our 3% that's funding it, so we can grow faster. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly right. We just started with this one because it was local and we could manage it. But absolutely, I would love to add more of these or find other ways to support the space. And that's what I meant by we're finding new ways that the social mission is driving us into new areas, including education in this space. There's this whole cool thing of like apitherapy, which is sort of the medicine side of honey and hives. Super neat stuff. Like, anyway, so there's loads of cool things that could potentially come out of this as well. That's totally different.
So there's hiveology, hives. Obviously, it's adorable. I get the alignment there. Why else did you choose this social mission? Other than obviously the fact it fits the brand, it's more than just fitting the brand. There's probably a real problem going on, right?
Yeah, there's a massive problem. And we started building out a small apiary before hiveology. So the two just happened to come together. It was really interesting that the whole thing it felt very organic. And I know that sounds sort of cheesy, but it really was. My husband and I fell in love with the idea of having our own bees. And I've always wanted to do that. And up until moving here, I was a city girl and that was not going to be happening anytime soon. So all of this became possible with my move to New York. So, you know, it's pretty exciting to be able to do this, and two together is even more powerful. So that's where we meet, because we were thinking about a couple of different social missions. And then it was like, let's just fund this and make it big. So that's exactly what happened.
I love it. I don't think we touched on, why did you move to New York? You could have moved anywhere. Why New York?
Well, because I fell in love with the guy that lived in New York State. Why else?
Good reason.
Why else do we really do these things? I'm from Toronto, and, you know, been a Toronto girl for a long, long time. And, you know, it's funny because he grew up in Brockport near you, and, you know, we happened to meet, and that was it. So we checked out both sides of the border and fell in love with this area. And the Finger Lakes is absolutely beautiful. And we were able to get the property we wanted. So we bought this gorgeous place down here, and we couldn't be happier. It's lovely here.
Well, congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Since we're talking about fun stuff like this, let's step away from business for a minute.
Sure.
You're obviously a hard worker, but you don't work 24/7. Let's say it's a weekend, it's a vacation. What's Sabina doing just for fun?
Well, the two of us, one of the reasons we ended up getting married is we have a lot of stuff that we have in common. And, you know, some of the stuff is here around the farm, honestly, because this property we bought, between the bees, we have the bees that we're managing. We've got some animals, but we also have about 30 acres of maple trees. So it happens to be maple syrup time down here. So we're messing around with that a little bit too. So lots of outdoorsy stuff and lots of like lake life and hunting and all that kind of stuff and fishing. But we also both are gearheads. So he used to race cars and so did I. So we like to take a vehicle out or his motorcycle and go do some traveling and all that kind of stuff, which is a huge amount of fun. But I'm also just a big music person. So we travel a lot for music. We'll go to festivals or whatever we can. And just being down here, and frankly, where I was before in Toronto and Niagara-on-the-Lake, big wine people too. So it's a beautiful wine region down here. So we do a lot of that as well. But that's the core of it.
You like outdoors, you like wine, you like festivals, you like music. I actually think you chose a good place.
I think so too. That it really feels like the right home for us, you know, and you would laugh. You have to come down here one of these days, but we have probably, I'm just looking out the window here, we probably have about 12 different vehicles, including my old race truck sitting in our barn, which is just over here. And, you know, this area is a blast for that kind of thing. You can just take out a snowmobile or whatever. You can just take out and go have some fun. So I'm really looking forward to doing more of that. We've been crazy busy the last couple of years starting this business, and my husband just started his. So things have been a bit nuts, but it's starting to get a little easier. So we'll be able to do more of that.
I'm thinking let's table the you come see my studio idea. That's kind of boring. I want to come see you. You got to show me how it's done. You got to show me how it's done. You're like an award-winning motorist, right?
Yeah, it was a few years back now, but my team and I ran the Baja 1000, which is the Baja Mexico off-road rally race. It's every November, and we won it 3 out of 5 times that I did it. So, which was phenomenal. But keep in mind, we ran in an amateur truck class, which means any vehicle that was not a pro, but was considered a truck. So you could have a Hummer at the back end, which is what I started racing in, all the way to like a little tiny Suzuki Sidekick or some little miniature thing that I don't even know if they make those anymore, but that was one of the vehicles back then. And anything in between. So the first 2 years we ran in a Hummer, and the last 3 years we ran in a modified Jeep thing. It was turned into your own little desert vehicle, but it's pretty great. So we have our own Baja Bug, and that's what we raced in for a number of years.
Interesting. You got to send me like a photo or a video or something that I can put in the notes so we can get a visual of it all. That's fascinating.
I would love to. Absolutely. There's a couple of great movies too. There's one called Dust to Glory that if you go, it's on YouTube. If you pop into YouTube, there's two versions of it. One of them, I forget which one, we're in it for about 30 seconds.
But oh, really?
Because we were an amateur class. They were filming the pro classes. So we didn't get in there long, but there's a scene where we're zooming by somebody else. It was very fun. But it's crazy. That's a whole nother story. I'll tell you someday. We'll have a few drinks and I'll tell you some of the insanity of that part of my life. That was pretty crazy stuff.
That does sound fun. I wrote it down, Dust to Glory. I'm going to watch that, and I'm going to look for you.
Okay. You'll see the truck, not me.
Got it. I'll see the truck.
Yeah.
I'm all over the place now. I almost want to just change the podcast to a whole new topic. Let me ask you. Well, we're going to go into the rapid fire round in a moment. Just rapid fire, quick, all over the place question just to have fun. But before that, I want to ask you, Hivology, I obviously want to continue to support you. How can me and the listener at home support you in everything you're doing?
There's right now, because we're heavily focused on real estate, you know, and we're new, certainly anybody who wants to tell anybody in the space about us and, you know, encourage them to come and check out what we're doing would be amazing. We have lots of fun stuff that's everywhere from some of our micro training is either free or very inexpensive. We've got workshops that are everywhere from $25 and up. So we've got lots of affordable stuff that people can jump into. And then we have our specialist programs that are available for people. It's a higher investment, but they're full-on specialist programs. So somebody will walk away with an expertise in something pretty deep. Mm. And most of the programming is designed to give them a new income stream or a new sector that they can access right away. So they'll see the return on it really, really quickly. So those are the things that right now are what we would appreciate the most, certainly. Later when we're more expanded, then there'll be more, but right now it's very much a real estate thing. So it's agents and brokers.
Got it. Real estate. And for the real estate listeners, just give us an example. Like, what would be an example of a workshop and the benefit of taking it?
So our workshops vary, but we always try to focus on this idea of helping them find a new skill, a new sector, or a new tactic of some kind that they can apply immediately. So for instance, we have 4 weeks to a six-figure pipeline, which is kind of cool. You know, they add a brand new six-figure pipeline into whatever they're doing now, or if they don't have any. So somebody walks away in 4 weeks with $100,000 in their pipeline, more than they had. So that's the kind of thing that we're trying to do. Or we have programming to teach people new sectors like short-term rentals. So being an agent for short-term rentals transactions, or for themselves to invest in short-term rentals if they want to do that. Because a lot of agents are sort of often looking at something from both perspectives. You know, they're looking at it on how to build their practice, but they're also doing it themselves. A lot of investment from real estate agents is pretty common. You know, we have another program on distressed properties to teach people how to compassionately represent people going through distressed scenarios. Mm. And distressed scenarios could be things like, you know, foreclosures and, you know, that whole thing. But we like to help them before they get to foreclosures so that an agent can actually help guide somebody into a resolution that might keep them out of foreclosure. So there's many, many ways. There's like 8 or 10 different ways that somebody can become distressed. So we talk about that and try to teach them that sort of stuff. Could be something on home staging. It could be something on, we have this really cool Web3 program that we're launching in about a week that will teach them what they really need to know about Web3 in the real estate space. Because a lot of people don't understand it yet, which is fair. You know, it's like, what do I really need to know about crypto or NFTs or fractional or tokenization? These sorts of terms are scaring people, I think, a little bit. So we tried to make a really, really practical little course. So that's sort of typical of the kind of programming that we've got.
I love it. And I have real estate agents as friends and clients, so I'm going to bring that up. I'm wondering just out loud here, like one day we might be buying and selling homes with cryptocurrency. So as an agent helping facilitate that, staying up to date on what's new and trending and required really is important, right?
Yeah, it's pretty critical. I mean, people have already been doing that. And there are lots of other what's considered sort of Web3 implications for agents. So crypto is a big one because that is the piece that intersects with a client, where a client says, I'm going to pay the down payment with crypto or whatever it is. They need to understand how that transaction will work. They don't necessarily have to be the ones that make facilitate it, because that's what we're helping them with. Like, well, here's the resources, but they need to not go blank when somebody says, you know, I'm planning on using crypto to buy this property. And crypto's going back up again. Everybody was disillusioned there for a while, but crypto and Bitcoin and others are starting to climb again. So this might get hotter than they realize, faster than they think. So it's something that people need to know about. But there's also things like one of the sexiest topics that people are talking about is what's called tokenization or fractional ownership. And this is the ability to buy a property like you buy a stock, where you're buying a percentage of ownership. So I could go out and spend, you know, whatever dollars to buy 7% of a home. That you can do with the underlying blockchain and with fractional or tokenization. So there's some pretty cool stuff that's coming, but there's stuff people are using every day already. You know, Web3 is things like AI. It's things like, you know, virtual staging. Those are technically all Web3 things they're already using, or smart contracts, which are certainly happening and will take over all contracts. So it's important that they understand what's happening with that for sure.
Let me ask you one simple question. So sure. I'm not a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. Can I still buy fractional property, or do I need to be an agent to make? So I could, I want to learn just so I could start doing that, because maybe I can't afford a, you know, mansion in an up and coming area, mm-hmm. but I could possibly own a fraction of it. And interesting. I want to go down a rabbit hole. I need to learn.
Yeah, it's very, very new, and there's not a lot of places that know how to do it or know how to do the title properly. It's still very young, but we're working with a title company right now, for instance, that is supporting the development of the program as well, because they're really keen on this, and they're looking at the sort of how do you implement fractional ownership in a title scenario, because you have to use blockchain to be able to do that. So that's why people need to understand these terms, because if you don't really get what the difference is, let's say, between blockchain and crypto, or what an NFT is, or what fractional even means, they're actually not complicated. And what we're doing is we're just telling them the practical implications. You don't need to know how to execute on all this stuff. That's what these experts are doing. You know, you just need to understand what it does, but more importantly, what the opportunities are. Fractional alone, assuming it goes the way it looks like it's going, could be enormous. And it opens up a whole new space for property ownership. So pretty cool in and of itself. Yeah.
We'll pause that there. I'm going to say one thing for the listener. If anybody wants to purchase land in a city that's beginning to flourish, reach out to me. We'll find a way to partner. This sounds fantastic, and it looks like we have a great resource to help us do this in Sabina. So we'll see what happens, but I'd love to own land in an up-and-coming, you know, outskirts of a city, and see where that takes us in the next 40 years. So we'll see what happens there.
Okay. That sounds great.
Rapid fire round. This is just fun. Either or, fill in the blank. Some are completely fill in the blank, but you know, quick questions. The points don't matter. There's no, you know what? It's like, whose line is it anyway? But it's like Family Feud that we want to move quick.
You got it. I'll do my best.
Beer, wine, or fill in the blank?
Oh, tough one. Bourbon sours.
Bourbon sours. Cats, dogs, or fill in the blank?
Both, 50-50. Two cats, two dogs, and just in love, as much in love with both of them.
Good answer. We're in the Northeast in the United States. Well, what's your favorite time of year?
Spring, now, for sure. Everything growing. I love it.
Springtime. Let's do a couple fun ones. Springtime, ice cream flavor.
Oh, tough one. I would have to go with any kind of caramel, anything.
Caramel, anything and everything.
Yeah.
Another kind of goofy one. So what superhero of all superheroes, what fictional superhero do you most identify with?
Oh, I have to go with the Julie Newmar's Catwoman. She's not really a superhero, but she's pretty cool.
I'll count it.
Good.
And let's do a big one. Take your time, as much time as you need with this. So, because you've accomplished a ton of stuff. Let's pinpoint one, or I'll give you two, proudest moment of your career thus far.
Oh, just work? So lifetime stuff or just work?
Let's do two categories. So career and personal. Mm-hmm.
Career for me, proudest moment was, I think, when we initially, this is quite a few years ago too, when we initially got the contract to do all of the NAR stuff, because it was such a big deal. Like, everybody on the planet wanted that contract. So that was a big one. You literally couldn't do a bigger deal. So that was pretty exciting for me. And I was, you know, 20 something and pretty excited. So that was very, very cool. And then a couple of times I've been published. So that was, that's up there too, but that was probably the biggest. Yeah. And then personal for me, besides, you know, the people I love in my life and, you know, my family and marriage and all that, for me, it was the Baja Winds. That was by far like one of the coolest things I've ever done. So we'll take that and the proudest.
Love it. Mm-hmm. So Sabina, it's hivology.com.
It is.
Is that where I should go? Is there a social media, email? What's the best way to reach out and say hello?
Hivology.com is certainly, you know, a good start. All of our social is there as well. But me personally, through, you know, my LinkedIn page is probably the easiest place to find me. Or my Instagram, one of those is absolutely all good.
Mm. Well, hey, thank you for coming on the show. Let's end with some integration, because people learned a lot today in a lot of different categories. We talked about it. Learning's not just a box you check and then you're done. What do you recommend someone, based on everything we talked about, what do you recommend I go do to actually put this into practice?
I think some of the most important things anybody can do, I don't care what you're trying to learn, is make sure that you have developed some kind of a personal follow-up accountability model. Because all of us have trouble, you know, when the excitement of something that you're learning wears off, it gets much, much tougher. I mean, the stats are that by mid-February, almost everybody, like 98% of people, have dropped off whatever New Year's resolutions or whatever it is that they've committed to. And people go in hard, really excited, and, you know, I'm going to make a change or I'm going to do something exciting. And if you go in with that kind of energy and it still doesn't last more than 4 weeks or so, then imagine how hard it is to do things that require a bit of a heavy lift. The best way to do that is through community, through accountability, and finding, you know, communities where they can support you and deliver what you need. So that's always my recommendation. I don't care what you're doing.
So find a community, find an accountability buddy, and start implementing this stuff. I'm excited to see the mission get bigger and grander and the industries to expand. I'm just really excited for everything you're doing. And I'm just a blimp in the journey, but I appreciate being a part of it.
No, I've really enjoyed getting to know you too. So we're going to do the reverse. I want to have you on ours too and introduce you to our audience for sure.
Let's rock and roll. That sounds fun, Let's Sabina. Do it.
That's great. Thanks for having me, Ben. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Thanks. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@balbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.